This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Tick Maynard. I'm back again with the USEA podcast here. And I thought this week we'd talk about anthropomorphism. There's been a lot of debate about that. If you follow that kind of thing, if you're on some of these blogs or websites, or you go to some of these clinics to talk about natural horsemanship, but also even in just the general world of showing and competing, you know, more and more people are kind of talking about how horses think and feel. And one of the words that comes up all the time is anthropomorphism. So first of all, what is anthropomorphism? And that is when you give human traits and emotions to animals, or I guess to really anything. And the first question that obviously comes up is, are there specific human emotions that are only applied to humans? And I think some people would argue that right away that's a little egocentric to think that animals don't have emotions. You know, for example, if we talk about surprise or anger or sadness or fear or joy or love, are those things that specifically apply to humans, or could any animal feel them? And I think probably it'd be hard to argue that animals don't feel those emotions. The problem, of course, gets into if we're being able to read the animal, you know, in this case, horses, are we reading them correctly or incorrectly? And on a fundamental level, we're talking a lot about, you know, the reason for all of this is that we're trying to communicate with animals. We're trying to have them, you know, communicate with us. And we're trying lots of different things to communicate with them, but they can really only communicate with us on a basic level in two ways. They can show, you know, they can show more attention, or they can show more relaxation. And that's what we're trying to pick up on. And it takes decades of experience to be able to read that, and intuition as well, and study and learning to be able to look at, you know, the ears, the mouth, the muzzle, the tightness in the jaw, the swishing of the tail, and maybe the flanks go tight. Maybe when they're trotting, you get that little grunting sound. Maybe the pace quickens a little bit or becomes a little more erratic, or they shy a little bit left or right. You know, all those things maybe showing a little bit of tension. And then also being able to realize where that tension came from. And if your horse spooks at a little twig, was it the twig that actually did that? Or was there a lot of tension simmering beneath the surface before that happened? Were they, you know, unsure about the wind? Were they unsure about the new saddle that you were trying? You know, did they have some mild ulcers? Were they in a new environment or with new weather or new grain? And so maybe the twig was just the straw that broke the camel's back. And so having the experience to be able to read all that is really what's going to give you the ability to anthropomorphize correctly or incorrectly, which I think is the basic mistake that people make, not whether we're anthropomorphizing at all, but how we're doing it. And for decades, scientists, you know, this has been a debate in the general scientific world of animal behavior, of, you know, doing it with all kinds of animals. And Charles Darwin was one of the first people to talk about animals being playful or having fun. And then for a long time, a lot of scientists have said that we shouldn't anthropomorphize. We should only talk about animals and things that are measurable and things where you can see empirical evidence for how they're doing something, simply their movement or their reactions. And that's gaining a lot of ground these days. And I can empathize with that stance, because so many people are anthropomorphizing incorrectly. And those are probably people that are relatively new to horses, or that they haven't spent much time, you know, really studying horse behavior. And if a horse, you know, comes to get a treat out of their pocket, you know, they might say that the horse is being aggressive rather than the horse is just hungry, and it's learned that that's a place where it can get food. So I think the trick is to look at, you know, people that you really trust, look at the horsemen that you really trust and admire, and see how they relate to animals. Are they using words like trust and respect? You know, are they using words like pride and amusement? You know, what kind of words are you using to describe your horse, and how does that affect how you relate to your horse? I think your thoughts, there's an old saying, your thoughts become your actions, you know, and your actions become your habits. And I think it's really important to pay attention to what words you're using and to study a little bit why you're using those words and how. It's very easy to take emotion right out of it and to say that animals simply react to things. But I think it's much harder to really go on a deeper level and be able to study it. There's a quote here that I'm going to just read you from Buck Brannaman. I think probably a lot of you have seen that movie. And this is the quote. "Horses don't think the same as humans. Something that's most unique about the horse that I love is not what he possesses, but what he doesn't possess. And that is greed, spite, hate, jealousy, envy, prejudice. The horse doesn't possess any of those things. If you think about people, the least desirable people to be around, you usually possess some or all of those things. And the way God made the horse, he left that out." I think that's a really nice quote, but already if you look at, people's comments on that online, a lot of people are saying that the horse does feel spite or hate or jealousy. And I think what that comes down to is how you're reading the horse. And there's not really any right or wrong answer. For us to, for anybody, or for me or Buck, to anybody to say we truly understand the horse is probably a little bit ignorant in itself. But I think you can always try to get a little bit better about it. And for me, the biggest difference is that horses may feel some or all of those things, or they may not, but the stuff that they do feel occurs much more in the moment. And if a horse is feeling jealousy, it's something that occurs in the moment. It's not something that has forethought or planning or something that's doing beneath the surface, whereas people will carry that with them forever. One of the hardest things about working with a horse is to be able to be strong with the horse, but then be instantly relaxed afterwards. If you see a horse in a paddock with another horse, it might kick the horse or even bite the horse, but then a second later, they could both have their heads down and be grazing again. And that's the ability to be less emotional in situations like that is probably the biggest thing that people can learn, that can learn about this subject that will apply to their training of horses. Now I'm just going to finish this talk here with just one more quote by the same person, by Buck Brannaman, who I do admire. And this is it. "The horse needs to respect you, but sometimes people confuse respect and fear, and they're not the same at all." And I think that's a great quote, but I think people need to really think about that, because how you define respect and fear differs, in different situations for all people. And I think that's really, to be able to understand that quote for myself included, it is a lifelong pursuit. And I look forward to doing that, and hopefully some of you guys are. And thanks for listening.
Well, we're joined now by Leslie Threlkeld and Cindy DePorter, who are co-organizers of the Heart of Carolina Horse Trials, which is coming up in May. And they are both obviously contributing equally, I think, to this total package of organizing a large event, which is a classic format too, as well. So Cindy, first of all, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's good talking to you again. I hadn't talked to you since before the ATCs a couple of years ago.
I know how ambitious you are out there, and we need to keep up regularly with you. But this is an exciting new project. You're co-organizers with Leslie Threlkeld, and she joins us as well. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, first of all, why don't we start with you, Leslie? I mean, you've come into this now. You're working with an old pro of Cindy, and I say that in the most endearing way, because you've got the advantage of lots of experience, both of you, in the sport, organizing this event and taking it to a new level, Leslie. So why don't we start with a little bit of the overview from you, if you would.
Southern Eight Farm, this is my second year being involved, and I'm so excited to be involved in such a great event. It's really special. Part of the reason is that it's just a unique event to the Classic Series. Obviously, the United States is the only country that still does the long format, and Southern Eight's Heart of Carolina's event is the only one that does a beginner novice 3-day. We also do a novice and training 3-day, and we're adding new levels this year, including the assistance allowed for beginner novice and a preliminary combined training. So it's very dedicated to education, very dedicated to including as many people as possible and just having a good time with our horses.
Yeah, and so, of course, a very popular event already. But I want to talk to you, Cindy, about maintaining that classic format. As Leslie said, we are the only country in the world to do that now, to keep it going. Why do you feel passionately that this is important, that we maintain that in this country?
You know, Chris, the long format gave you, as a writer, and as you so sagely and politely pointed out, as an older individual, I actually did ride in the three-day format very many years ago. And it is the ultimate training, because it is the ultimate test of the horse. But you get such a sense of it, it's a totally different relationship you have with your horse when you're out there. I can still remember being on the horse at 5:30 in the morning and doing the road work on a hard surface, so I could keep his legs tight. And you know, when you're having to do trot sets of 45 minutes to an hour to make sure you've got the level of fitness you need, you know, it brings it to a much different level. Also, you learn to take care of your horse in that competitive environment and understand the demands that are going to be made on his body and the demands that are going to be made on yours. So it is a process as you take that journey to get the horse competitively fit and yourself fit to be able to compete.
Well, has someone like yourself, well, I think we're about the same vintage, who has grown up with that traditional format and understands the benefits of the horsemanship, the endurance type fitness, it is something that we have kind of left behind for a generation, haven't we, and in across the country. But having just one event that maintains it, how do you think this is going to impact the sport, Cindy? I mean, and what do you think it's going to do to encourage people to understand the endurance-type fitness and the horsemanship that that long format demands?
You know, Chris, I believe that we see so many people coming into our sport, and we really, you know, it's the horsemanship that we continue to want to encourage. And that's what has made eventing so special, so very, very special through the years, because it's you and the horse, and it's you boots on the ground. You have to be the person to do the work, and you have to learn about what it takes, you know, to keep a horse fit, to keep a horse sound, to keep a horse emotionally engaged. And as they continue to become fitter, you have a different horse on your hands. So it's learning from that basic level, which is why we do the beginner novice and moving forward up through the process, up through training. And we try to do it in a format that is very, very educational. It's very encompassing. It's, you know, we really give the people everything that they need on site when they come to us to be prepared to really do that competition. I you know, I almost wish, and I know it can't ever happen, but I almost wish that everybody would have to do a training 3 day before they ever moved up through the ranks. And I know that we can't do that, but you know, it's amazing when you talk to people afterwards, and if you'll see the numbers that do the training 3 days successfully, and they make the step to preliminary successfully. So to me, doing it beginner, novice, and training, you help people learn to make the step to each, you know, as they want to go up, successful. And I think that's what's very important about the three-day format.
Leslie, talk a little bit about the interest in that format, the kind of entries that you've been getting, how you would expect this to go forward, really, with the responses that you've had so far to people wanting to continue with this format.
Well, the USEA has certainly a very healthy classic series with quite a few events in the country that are doing the novice and training 3 days. The beginner novice 3 day, like I said, is unique to Heart of Carolinas, and Haggard Mid-South is the only one that has a preliminary 3 day. So there is still quite a lot of interest in the country in doing the long format, and a lot of people make that their big goal for the year, to do a long format competition, and they set up their entire season so that they can finish it with a long format competition and get that experience. That being said, it's not so hard to qualify. We've had quite a few questions so far about qualifications, and for the beginner novice and the novice 3-day, any rider who has completed 4 horse trials at that level is qualified. And there are a few more qualification requirements for training in 3 days, or training in preliminary 3 days. But for the beginner novice and the novice, it's very feasible to set that as your goal for the year. Now, when Southern Eights started, at Harvick Carolina started at Southern Eights, there were not quite a lot of numbers, but it was only the long format competition that was taking place. We've since added the horse trials, and the numbers have been going up, but we're really excited to be able to include people who are competing in the horse trials and all of the educational activities that we offer. And sometimes we see those people coming back the next year and choosing to participate in the long format instead of the horse trials, which is a wonderful thing to see that interest continue to grow.
Cindy, let me come back to you when Leslie mentioned the Classic Eventing Challenge. You have that Classic Eventing Challenge with Southern Pines. Talk a little bit about that for us. Explain what people should know about it if they're thinking of competing there this year.
Okay. Mark Donovan is the organizer for the Southern Pines Horse Trials, Longleaf, both Southern Pines 1 and Southern Pines 2, and then, of course, 5 Points in September. And Mark is our course designer for Heart of Carolina for our show jumping course and has been since the inception of Heart of Carolina's. He was talking, and we were just talking about the fact that there is a very robust eventing population, in North Carolina, South Carolina, Area 2, Area 3. And so he says, why don't we have a challenge, a classic challenge, and let it end, let the final qualifying possibility be at the Heart of Carolina in May, because we run the week of the Kentucky Derby. And so that's how this idea was born out, and the thought process is that whoever is a pretty basic concept is that whoever has the best score of one of the events that they compete in, either Southern Pines 1, Longleaf, or of course Heart of Carolina will also count, but they have to compete at Heart of Carolina. They have to do the 3-day. The other two, they can do the horse trials, which also, of course, utilizes, it makes it qualifiers to moving forward to Heart of Carolina's. And whomever has the best score then would be the winner of the grand prize. And we're only going to be doing one grand prize. So that was the whole thought process behind it, is to help build up towards and to help encourage people and help them, get qualifying results so they can come to Heart of Carolinas and compete into 3-day.
Right. Now, the other thing that we should mention is that you're now a 501(c)(3).
Yes.
3C?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that and the decision to do that, Cindy.
Okay. We talked quite a bit with the owner of the farm, who is Brad Turley, and we talked about the fact that, our competition is a labor of love. We don't make money on the competition. And the thought process was behind that with our sponsors, and we have a lot of sponsors, and we have people that want to get involved, and it seems like the way to go in terms of helping to market our event to people who wanted to help sponsor us, because, as I said, it's in our case, we're not looking to make the money. We're looking to provide educational opportunities and to teach people about horsemanship and to give people a place to have a destination event, to have our adult amateurs to be able to, and our young riders, maybe, or folks like me. We had a 62-year-old lady that was her destination event, and she brought 2 horses. And so we want to give that as an opportunity also for people to be able, and they would have the benefit of the tax deduction.
Okay. Leslie, give us an overview, if you would, now, of what to expect at this year's event, because it rolls out in May. It is an ultimate destination for many eventers in this area on the East Coast to start their season with a bang over there.
Indeed, we're really excited about this year. Like Cindy said, it's all about education, and we have a lot of activities planned. All of the riders that are participating in the long format get to practice steeplechase before they actually go out and do the steeplechase, which is an extremely beneficial opportunity for anybody who's not ever had the chance to practice steeplechase on a proper track. We also have 10-minute box sessions with our veterinarian. Last year it was Debbie Williamson, and that's good for the rider so that they know what to expect before they get to the 10-minute box. What else have we got? We've got learning how to do the horse inspections. You learn how to jog your horse before we do the proper horse inspection so you can present your horse in the best possible way. And in terms of other activities, we have some fun things planned for the week. As you said, it's the Kentucky Derby weekend. It's also Cinco de Mayo and Mother's Day, so we're hoping to have activities planned to celebrate all three of those holidays. And then, of course, we have the Saturday night competitors party where we have a local DJ come out. We eat good food. We dance all night. It's really a good time.
You dance all night, and they get up and ride the next day.
That's right. let me add just one thing to what Leslie was saying. We also have Carol Kowaleski is coming down, and she's our main clinician this year. And so she'll be with us basically from Thursday through Sunday. And as Leslie pointed out, we teach you how to do a proper horse inspection. We teach you how to, as she said, going back in the 10-minute box. Dr. Williamson, Debbie Williamson is our vet. She will be back again this year, as she always is. We teach you you get to practice steeplechase. And we have regulation steeplechase fences and a groomed steeplechase track. So you get to learn how to do that. We do a rider test. And so we have riders that are judges that are judging sit and critique a test and tell the riders what they're looking at as far as the dressage. You know, what are things that judges are looking at? We have a stellar line of officials this year, too. So we're very excited about that. So we really take you from when you walk on the grounds to you leave, and we pretty much take you all the way through it. We help you as much as you want or as least as you want, but all of those opportunities are there.
Wonderful opportunities for education then at this year's event. As always, Cindy, thank you very much. Finally, Leslie, just round us up for us, will you, and tell us exactly when the dates are and the address for this event. I know people will look in the omnibus, but there may be people who are listening who would like to attend anyway. So give us the information we need to know about this year's event.
Okay, the competition is the first weekend of May, so I believe our event starts on the 6th, that's Friday, through the 8th, and then we have educational activities for our long format competitors on Wednesday and Thursday. The competition's in Chesterfield, South Carolina, which is about an hour and a half from 2 hours from Charlotte. The address is 305 Lucius Davis Road. And if you need any more information, you can find us online. We have an Instagram and Twitter account, both of which handles our HOTC3Day. You can find Southern Eights on Facebook. And our website is www.so8ths.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed, Leslie, for that. And Cindy, good to have you back.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.